I don't remember last time we talked what was the face of war, but right now we know that the situation in Ukraine is more fragile. It seems that the European Union, together with the United States, still don't have any clear strategy in the war in Ukraine. At the same time, we're hearing that Russia and China are getting closer. And how do you see the current face of war in Ukraine, considering what's going on the battlefield and the Russian strategy on the battlefield?
I think it's probably in the final phase, the war. Whether or not that final phase is going to be weeks or many months, I'm not so sure about that. Russia is obviously winning the war. It's securing the decisive military advantage. I just don't see any way that Ukraine is going to be able to make any kind of a military comeback. It's just going to be continue to take huge losses. It's going to continue to be forced to retreat here and there. The question in my mind is, how long can the Ukrainians keep fighting? And it's quite possible we may come to a point in the not too distant future in which the Ukrainians are effectively unable to keep fighting. And at that point, the war will come to an end in some form. If the Ukrainians do continue fighting, obviously their ability to continue fighting at all depends on Western support, Western material aid. I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether that's going to be sufficient to keep the fight, but quite possibly. But even if they are able to continue fighting and able to retreat into defensible positions where they can hold off the Russians for a bit longer, that isn't going to make any difference to the fact that the war is going to end with some kind of Russian military victory over Ukraine and over the West. So that's the way I see the war at the moment. I mean, obviously, my hope is that the war's going to come to an end as soon as possible. That there is going to be some kind of diplomatic breakthrough. That there are going to be negotiations that will bring the war to an end and arrive at some kind of stable peace settlement. But obviously, this very there are some signs that that might be possible, but mostly the signs are that the war is going to continue for a bit longer anyway, because Ukrainians seem determined to fight on, and they have some capability to continue fighting. The West, United States, seems to want to the war to continue. In the US, it seems to be the case that the Democrats are banking on the war, spinning out at least until the November presidential election. So that's their, that's their bet. They're betting Ukrainians can hold out for a few more months. The Europeans seem to me to be floundering all over the place, but their strategy seems to be to just hang on in there, keep the Ukrainians fighting and hope that something positive turns up.
Yeah. In your opinion, when we were talking about Ukrainians, are we talking about Zelensky and his administration and these people who are around him who are willing to continue this fight, or we are literally talking about ordinary Ukrainians?
Well, I think as far as I'm aware, opinion among ordinary Ukrainians is shifting in the direction of ending the war as soon as possible and arriving at some kind of peace deal, even if it, it means losing war, accepting defeat and accepting territorial losses, accepting restrictions on Ukrainian sovereignty. I think, yeah, the impression I have from my knowledge of opinion poll data in relation to Ukraine is that, there are lots of people who've come to that view, but still, there's still, a strong minority of the population that is determined to fight on, and of course, and that minority of the population holds sway, and of course, it's the base on which Zelensky's political power rests, and also the base upon which the Ukrainian Ukraine army's armed forces are able to continue prosecuting war. But how long, before that, the popular basis for war, and there's no doubt that there is a popular basis, how long that before that crumbles completely, and pro peace, pro end of the war sentiments come to fore in Ukraine. That's hard to tell, but it's something that could happen sooner than people expect.
Yeah. In your opinion, in the process of ending this war in Ukraine, are we gonna have some sort of escalation, in your opinion, on the part of the West, as they're talking about, right? Just recently, one of the members of Bundestag in Germany was talking about using NATO air defense system in Poland and Romania and shooting everything coming to the western part of Ukraine. And on the part of Russians, they were talking about non-strategic nuclear weapons if NATO gets involved in this conflict, literally, if they want to confront Russia directly. Do you see, are we heading toward escalations, or are we getting to the point that everybody's looking for a political settlement?
I think it remains an open question. There is still a distinct danger of escalation. I mean, at the moment, Western hardliners are waging a kind of massive kind of like propaganda campaign in favor of providing more support to Ukraine, allowing Ukraine to use Western weapons and facilities to attack Russia directly, of some increasing Western direct involvement in the war in various forms, including perhaps by introducing some troops in some form. That they're waging a massive kind of campaign, and that their argument is that, well, it's do or die, and if Ukraine goes down, we're all going to go down with them. So they're presenting it as an existential struggle, and what they're trying to do is to say, yeah, look, we accept there's a huge risk of escalation into a bigger war with Russia. But we have to go with that risk because the alternative is complete defeat and utter destruction, not only of Ukraine, but of the whole Western world. And that's the kind of hysterical terminology that they're increasingly using. Now, I don't think they're in the majority at the moment in the various Western countries. I think there's a tendency to go along with their rhetoric, but when it comes to making actual decisions, there's a certain amount of caution there, because of course the risk of escalation, the more the West gets involved in the war, it remains, and what's at stake in taking that risk, it's huge, isn't it? It's like an all-out war with Russia and all the kind of consequences that that might bring. And I think there's enough people on the Western side who don't want to take the risk, who prefer to risk facing the consequences of being defeated in Ukraine, of Russia winning the war, rather than the possible consequences of getting involved in a war with Russia. So at the moment, I think the balance is in favor of the more moderate elements in the Western political military establishment, rather than the radicals who want to go all in with an escalation. But it's hard to tell, it's hard to know where it's going to go. And the atmosphere around the war is so emotional, so emotionally kind of charged, so irrational in many ways that, anything is possible, in my opinion. The only other thing I would say is that ultimately, the decision about whether or not to escalate the war won't be taken in Europe or by Europeans themselves. That's an American decision. I really don't believe that any of the European governments, even the most hawkish of them, are actually going to do anything without the Americans being lined up in support. So really, it comes down to a decision for the Americans. And in the end, the Americans might talk about the Ukraine war being an existential struggle for the United States, but it's a kind of quite a flimsy kind of argument, because it obviously isn't. Whereas it's an argument that has a lot more purchase, a lot more credibility in the European context, doesn't it? It can be construed as being existential for Europe, but it's a stretch to say it'd be existential for the United States. And of course, the Americans have other things on them on their mind, don't they? They're dealing with the situation in Gaza and the Middle East. In many ways, the United States views that particular conflict and its alliance with Israel as being more existential to the United States than its relationship with Ukraine. And then, of course, then we have the China factor and the whole dispute issue in relation to Taiwan and the possibility of conflict in that sphere. So I think all of and also I think American public opinion is against escalation, very definitely against escalation. And there's strong elements of the in the Republican Party in particular who are opposed to further escalation. So I think the chances are that the Americans aren't going to authorize any kind of radical steps towards further Western involvement in the war. But on the other hand, the Americans, the Europeans might make a mistake. They might think they're doing something which is not particularly radical or escalatory, but it can be viewed in a different way from the Russian perspective. Yeah. Now turning to the Russians, of course, the Russians are doing everything they can to deter any further escalation. So, which is what all these recent warnings from Putin about the danger of nuclear war, these tactical exercises by the Russian armed forces, that's the message that they're trying to put across. And I think it's also the case that Russia has only committed part of its conventional armed forces to military operations in Ukraine. I mean, the bulk of Russia's military power has so far been held back. And I think it's been held back because the Russians are worried about getting involved in a much bigger war with the West. And then if that's going to happen, they want to be out of position to fight that war effectively, conventionally, as well as with, if necessary, with nuclear weapons. I suppose the other point to make here is that, when it comes to further Western involvement in the war and Western escalation of it, right? I think there's one huge kind of like factor which is telling against their escalation, and it's the fact that in terms of conventional warfare, the Western position vis-a-vis Russia is very weak at the moment. Yeah, the West is not in a position, doesn't have the strength to fight a major conventional war with Russia. If it did that, I'm firmly of the view that it would lose such a war. And I'm sure that sensible military advisors on the Western side are telling their politicians, they're saying to them, look, if you want to risk further intervention in the Ukraine war, further escalation, that's fine. But if you're going to do that, you have to be prepared for the contingency of getting involved in a major war with Russia. And at the moment, we're not in a position to wage such a war. Our armament stocks have been depleted because of the supplies to Ukraine. The Russians are outperforming us in terms of military, defense production. Russian economy is on a war footing. The Russia's mobilized hundreds of thousands of soldiers. It now has a very highly experienced and efficient, combat efficient and experienced military force at its disposal. We don't. We're not ready for war politically in terms of the po population. Our populations are very much against war. We're not in a position to fight a major conventional war with Russia, leaving aside the risk of nuclear escalation. So I think it's Western military weakness in conventional terms which may ultimately stop them doing anything to address it. But I don't know. I mean, I say that, but I'm not 100% convinced of my own argument because the more you the worse it gets for Ukraine and the West, the worse the war gets. The more desperate The West is getting, and the more desperate, of course, the and this is understand for understandable reasons, actually, the more desperate the Ukrainians are to draw Western states, Western armed forces more directly into the war, because that's their only hope of survival, of actually surviving this war intact. If they can't do that, then defeat is absolutely inevitable.
Yeah, I think the point you mentioned was this conventional war against Russia. It's so difficult right now for the West to, and if the West is not capable of having a conventional war, then here comes nuclear war. This is the problem that we're having right now, I think. That's why Putin keeps talking about nuclear weapons, nuclear war, because they are afraid of having a nuclear war with the West. That's the problem. And do you think, is there any possibility in the West, in your opinion, to go nuclear if something happens between NATO and Russia?
Well, I think they're afraid of nuclear war in the West as well. I mean, it's only really, a few kind of like lunatic kind of Western hardliners who don't seem to have that. No, I think there's a fear on the Western side, and it has been a restraining factor.
Jeff, before answering, because the reason behind this question that I asked was because Lindsey Graham gave a interview with on ABC News. He was talking about dropping nuclear bombs in the Middle East. These people are so unpredictable. That's why I've asked this question.
Yeah, but I don't think Lindsey Graham is representative of of mainstream Western thinking, or at least I hope it's not. So no, I think there is a genuine fear in the West about nuclear escalation as well. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, I mean, I was talking earlier about the possibility of major conventional war between Russia and NATO, and the fact that the NATO countries aren't actually prepared for that war, that Russia would win it easily. And but what that implies, of course, is that should such a war develop for some reason or other, then it would quite rapidly develop into a nuclear exchange, because that the West, and the escalation wouldn't come on the Russian side; it would come on the Western side. So that's a that's a that's a huge danger. But look, I share your concern. I mean, right, this whole war, I've been warning about the danger of escalation. The world is under threat. A greater threat of nuclear war than any time in its history. Far, the times we live in are far more dangerous than any times during the Cold War, when there was crisis and conflict and international tension and confrontation, including during the Cuban missile crisis. The existential danger is one that is hanging over, and it's not an insubstantial. An insubstantial, an insubstantial, an insubstantial danger. But there's another angle to this: is that okay? If you look at the Western hardliners and the views that are being expressed by those kind of people, there's two camps among. There are those who are saying, "Look, we have to go all in now and take and risk escalation, because if we don't, it's going to be an absolute disaster." But there are more sensible elements who say who are saying, no, what we need to be doing is to digging in for a long struggle with Russia. So we need to be militarizing our countries, our societies, preparing in the medium and long term for war with Russia. Now, for that element in the hardlines camp, they're not so concerned with what's going to happen to Ukraine. Yeah. Okay, I don't want Ukraine to lose, or to lose that badly, but in the end, they're prepared to see Ukraine lose, and they're prepared to see Ukraine fight on for as long as possible, because the longer Ukrainians fight, the more damage they will do to the Russians, and the longer Russia will take to recover from the war, and the more of a breathing space it will give for the Western side to actually remilitarize and build up its armed forces. So there is a more long-term view among on the Western side, which basically says, yeah, okay, this is an existential struggle with Russia, but it's not a struggle or a war that we have to fight now. You know, we can fight it later, and we should fight it later, when we're much better, when we're better equipped, better prepared for that for war with Russia. So, okay, so you know, we're talking about, you know, there's a war in Ukraine. There are many like immediate kind of dangers, extreme urgent dangers arising out of that war. But also for this situation, there's a profound long-term danger as well. Is that, you know, the war in Ukraine could end in some form. There could be some kind of resolution, even an agreement and a peace settlement of some kind. But still, the long-term trend would be in the direction of war between Russia and the West, because of this, not because, not on Russia's part, I don't think, but on the Western side, or at least among, among Western hardliners who believe that, that for the West to survive, politically and as a civilization, their view of its civilization, you know, it's going to have to take on Russia head on sooner or later.
Here comes the question. Do you think it's, most of the time when they're talking about Russia and fighting Russia in the West, and they're thinking that Russia would be alone? In my opinion, Russia would not be alone. Russia was not alone. Russia has not been alone during this conflict. China was with Russia. Iran was with Russia. If a major war happens in Ukraine against Russia, NATO against Russia, we're gonna have a major war in that region. It's not gonna be alone. Russia is not gonna be alone. But it doesn't seem that in the Western mainstream media, Western politicians are thinking of this. They're thinking that Russia, we can crush Russia without having a major war.
I'm not sure that they think that anymore. I think they've learned that lesson of history. That's what they thought when the war started, yeah, 2 years ago, 2 years ago, right? That was their project. That was their, but it's obviously been there. So I don't think they think that again. Yeah, sure. I it's very likely that the escalation of the Ukraine war into a broader conflict would draw in other countries as well, perhaps not directly into it, but into it in various ways. So, you know, so to take the case of China, I'm sure that in the event of a wider Russia-Western war arising out of the Ukraine situation, and a war that remains conventional, because of course, if the war goes nuclear, then all bets are off, and it's all over. We're all over. But assuming it stays conventional, then I'm sure in those circumstances, China would upgrade the level of its support to Russia. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, China sending its troops or directly getting involved. But they would certainly assist the Russians in some way. So China would certainly be a major ally in any conflict. Yeah, and the same also might apply to Iran, maybe other countries in the Middle East.
You know, when I thought that they thought that Western politicians, they're thinking that they can crush Russia, because we still having, recently we had Anthony Blinken. He went to China to convince Chinese not to help Russia. We had Janet Yellen to went to China. Olaf Scholz went there. They were all talking about the conflict in Ukraine, beside what they wanted to do with China. But they were to force, they went there to force China not to help Russia. And you know, this connection with the reality that is happening right now in the Western politicians, for the Western politician, is unbelievable. Because in my opinion, if there is somebody in this world who wants Russia win the war in Ukraine more than Putin, would be Xi. Because he knows if NATO defeats Russia in Ukraine, the next would be China in Taiwan. And that's why I don't understand why they're trying to convince China. China is totally in this war.
I kind of agree. I think the China, I think Xi, the Chinese, want Russia to win the war in Ukraine. Because if Russia loses in Ukraine, then they'll be next in line Yeah, for a Western proxy war, say over Taiwan, for example. But on the other hand, I don't think the Chinese want to see a prolonged war in Russia, in Ukraine. I think the Chinese want to see the war end in the near term rather than the long term, even if that means Russia doesn't get everything it wants and has to make some compromises and has to take some to take some risks. So yeah, China is, in a sense, an ally, certainly a partner and collaborator with Russia in relation to Ukraine war and also in relation to the broader confrontation between Russia and NATO and Russia and the West. But the Chinese have their own agenda, their own interests that they want to pursue. But having said that, the Chinese in favoring a negotiated end to the war, in being against the Ukraine war turning into a forever war or a forever conflict between Russia and the West. I mean, they're pushing an open door as far as the Russians are concerned, or at least as far as Putin's concerned, because I think that would be Putin's preference as well. I think that if it's at all possible, Putin would be prepared to negotiate a compromise peace, which would fall short of a total Russian victory over Ukraine and over the Western proxy war, right? And would involve Russia making some compromises, taking this risk. Obviously, Putin's not going to agree to any end to the war or peace settlement that would fundamentally threaten future Russian security. And he's going to demand a high price for bringing the war to an end short of the complete and utter defeat of Ukraine. But nevertheless, I think he's that way inclined, and so are the Chinese. And of course, that kind of position will be shared, by a number of countries in the world. Yes, in the global South, India, Brazil, Argentina, all kinds of, would favor that kind of outcome to the world. No, the problem is in finding a way to end the war. It's not on the Russian side or the Chinese side. It's on the Western side. It's on the Ukrainian side. I would say, I would focus more on the West because, in a sense, Ukraine fighting on for as long as possible is a kind of obvious and natural thing to do if you're Ukrainian or if you're a Ukrainian nationalist. Yeah, but they're only able to fight on with Western support, with Western aid. So in the end, the continuation of the war is a Western decision. So that's where the blockage lies in terms of finding a path towards peace, a path towards ending the war. And I'm not sure if there is a way to unblock the path to peace in the West. The only hope, I think, is that Russia's battlefield progress and Ukraine's increasing difficulties might actually persuade at least some Western leaders, some American politicians, actually engage in a bit of rational kind of thinking and rational calculation about the evolving situation, and it comes to the conclusion that actually, to bring in the war to an end sooner rather than later would be less dangerous than letting it drag on. But having said that, I don't know. I'm not actually not 100% convinced by my own argument.
When you look at Putin's new administration, in which he put an economist as the head of Ministry of Defense, what's your take? What's your assessment on what Putin is doing right now?
I think it was an exercise in rationalizing the Russian war effort. Danugai has a is an economics guy, an organization guy, an industry guy, and it seems like a rational thing to do to put someone like him in charge of the Russian war economy, effectively, because that's that's the main job that he's been given in being made Minister of Defense. So I mean that reflects like long-term thinking. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, in the short term, they want to maximize their efficiency in terms of military production to obviously in terms of fighting the current battles with Ukraine. But also, I think they're thinking. They're also thinking long term. They're thinking. And quite rightly, that maybe the war, certainly the conflict, will go on for years, perhaps or decades. So Russia has got to be in a position to be able to defend itself and deal with that situation. And the Russians are quite capable of reading and listening to what Westerners are saying about, oh, we need to dig in for a long war, a long conflict with Russia. We need to remilitarize, build up our armed forces, so in future we can fight an effective war with Russia. Russia know what's being said as much as I do. So they're preparing, they're preparing for the contingency as a kind of prolonged conflict and confrontation, with the West arising out of the war in Ukraine. And that may well be, what will happen. I mean, that might actually be what will happen, that sometime, perhaps very soon, the war in Ukraine itself will come to some kind of an end or cessation. But the struggle, the proxy struggle, or not just a proxy struggle, a direct struggle between Russia and the United States and Russia and the West, Russia and NATO, will continue into the indefinite future. So it's prepare. I mean, I think it's preparing for a long struggle or a long conflict is the way, the main way I would interpret Putin's like reshuffle, following his re-election as president.
Yeah, one of the reasons that in the West they're talking about in the United States, in the European Union, the people who are, we can call them the leaders of Europe, they're talking about that Russia wants to march after Ukraine, they want to march toward Europe. When you look at the history, do you find any single reason for Russia to attack Europe? What's in it for Russia to attack Europe? Because they have a vast country. They have everything in that country. Why they would need to attack Europe?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's no need. The only reason Russia needs to attack Europe is if Europe threatens its security, which is of course what happened in relation to the war in Ukraine. I mean, Russia invaded Ukraine in February 22 because Ukraine was being built up as a NATO military enclave. On Russia's borders, right? And Putin calculated that it was better to deal with that situation now rather than later. Yeah. So it was, an emergent threat on Russia's border that prompted Putin's invasion. And the same is true of many other kind of expansionary moves in Russian history. Another example, in relation to the Baltic states. So of course, the Baltic states were part of the Soviet Union for 50 years, something like 50 years, right? And that happened because in 1939, 1940, the Baltic states were taken over by the Soviet Union and incorporated into the USSR. But the reason that happened was because the Soviets saw a danger that the Baltic states were actually going to slip into the German camp and constitute a threat to Soviet security in the Baltic. Yeah, so from Soviet point of view, moving into the Baltic states in 1939, 1940, from their point of view, it was a defensive action. Now, of course, from the Baltic point of view, it was very much an aggressive action. But I mean, Western hardliners like to talk about, a history of like Russian aggression, expansionism, all this kind of thing. But actually, if you look at the details of that history, you certainly do find the expansion, you certainly do find aggression, but mostly it's of the defensive kind. Yeah, it's of the defensive kind. It's security, it's security oriented, and I see no evidence that that. Fundamental characteristic of Russian foreign policy extending over many hundred years has changed in the current situation. I don't, there is no evidence whatsoever that Putin has any ambition or interest in expanding into anywhere other than particular bits of Ukrainian territory that he wants to take over and become part of Russia. There is just no evidence that that's the case, and there's no evidence that Russia has the capability to do that. Okay, I was talking earlier about how in terms of conventional warfare, Russia is quite strong vis-a-vis the West at the present time. That's true, but that doesn't mean that Russia. So that's in the event of the West getting involved in the war of Ukraine and that developing into a wider war. But that's not the same as Russia itself actually invading the Baltic states or invading Poland. I don't think Russia has the strength to fight a very effective defensive war against NATO at the present time. But I don't think it has the strength to actually fight. An offensive war against NATO. It doesn't have those kind of capabilities, right? And even if it didn't, it chose to do, there would be an obvious danger of its escalation into nuclear war. So Putin neither has neither the means nor the intention, I think, to expand expand Russia into any NATO country. Putin's ambitions, Russian ambitions, are limited to what's going on in the Ukrainian context. And how far Russia will go in Ukraine, how far westward it would expand in Ukraine, depends on how the war goes, and it depends on how soon the war ends. The longer the war goes on, the more Russia is going to expand westward into Ukraine. The longer the war goes on, the more likely is Russia is going to consider it necessary to take control of the whole of Ukraine in some form. The sooner the war comes to an end, the more of Ukraine that will survive as an independent sovereign state. And instead of pouring all the these billions into arms and supporting the Ukrainian armed forces, and the West should be putting that money aside to support Ukraine's post-war reconstruction. Yeah, that's what they should be using their resources for, not prosecuting its ex-proxy war with Russia. And of course, this is a proxy war in Russia that is at Ukrainian expense, because it's not Westerners who are dying in their hundreds of thousands in this war. It's the Ukrainians.
Yeah. When you look at the latest trip of Putin to China, in which they were negotiating, the whole government was there. They were talking about a lot of things. And in your opinion, how did you find this visit of Putin to China? And at the end, we had this embrace, Xi embracing Putin, and which was so strange, and we haven't seen such a thing for a long time. I didn't see in my life. And what's your evaluation of this? What's your take on this trip?
Well, it just shows how strong the Russo-Chinese, Russo-Sino-Russian relationship is. Very graphically, shows that how close to cooperation. They have a strategic alliance, a strategic partnership, and all the signs are that it's rock solid, yeah. And that's why obviously China is the first place that Putin visits having been re-elected president, and he brings his team with him, obviously including was it Belousov, the new defense minister. He brings his important team, obviously, to have discussions with their Chinese counterparts. And of course, we can compare, Xi's hug of Putin, all the symbolism, the sentiment expressions, what happened during Putin's trip to Beijing, to how he treated, but what's his name, Blinken. And Janet Yellen, yeah. But the reason for that is quite simple. Putin and the Russians respect China, respect the Chinese. Yes, they see them as partners, not rivals or adversaries. They want to live. They want to cohabit. Yeah, Eurasia, they don't want to cooperate. For mutual, benefits. Not to say there aren't like tensions and different interests and all kinds of stuff going on like that, but all of that can be contained within a friendly, collaborative relationship, and that's what's been ongoing for a number of years, and all the signs are it's going to continue. And the Ukraine war, if anything, has reinforced the Sino-Russian partnership, right? And it's reinforced Chinese hostility to Western states, Western governments, who on the one hand are construing China as being an adversary, a competitor, a rival, and perhaps even a future opponent in a war on the one hand, and then on the other hand, they're coming to go to Beijing and complaining about China's support for Russia. What do they think the Chinese are going to do if they're faced with another country that is evidently self-consciously, publicly gearing up, for a long-term rivalry with China? What do they expect? How do they expect the Chinese to respond to that, except to actually to seek allies and partnerships with other countries, and particularly a country like Russia, a big country like Russia, big important, powerful country like Russia, which has a lot to offer China, to seek them out, as their closest collaborators and friends. As you said it earlier, it's sometimes very difficult to understand what's going through the heads of these Western politicians and decision makers. What do they think they're doing? What do they think they're going to achieve? How do they think the Chinese are going to respond to their demands? Surely they have advisors telling them something different here, but I don't know. Maybe they don't, because they keep on doing the same thing over and over again, making the same mistakes.
Yeah. As you mentioned, China doesn't like the war in Ukraine. They want to put an end to the war as soon as possible. And it seems that their prosperity goes through peace. And they're seeking peace because their economy would work better in peace than in war. That's why they're trying to do everything to bring peace. Even they suggested a peace plan for Ukraine, and nobody seems to care about it. And at the same time, you see the tensions are increasing in Taiwan. Do you think that the West, as much as China doesn't want this conflict, it seems that the West wants this conflict. How do you see this conflict in Taiwan?
Well, I don't like the war either. It's not just the Chinese. Most people don't like the war. I want to see it to end, come to end as soon as possible. And peace is good for the prosperity of everyone. Yeah,
Exactly.
that's what we need. We need a peaceful world order. That's what we fundamentally need. Yeah, that's the most. Yeah, in terms of Taiwan, no, it's interesting that. I mean, there's been some recent developments in Taiwan which are a bit worrying, like recent elections. This new president, isn't it? Yeah, who seems to be a bit more of a hardliner in terms of Taiwan's relations with China. But what gives me hope about Taiwan is that though the Americans might want to play certain games in relation to Taiwan, and there are hardliners on the American side who are kind of gagging for a war with China, or predicting the inevitability of a war with China, so they want to prepare for that conflict. So there's all kinds of like destabilizing and risk-taking, threatening kind of elements on the American side. What gives me hope is the Taiwanese population. Yeah, okay, they have like different voting and political preferences, but there seems to be, you know, a very solid majority of Taiwanese who don't want to disturb the existing status quo, don't want to do anything too precipitate, don't want to provoke a conflict with mainland China, and they want to provide the Americans with opportunities or excuses to involve themselves even more deeply in their affairs. So I think the political dynamics, domestic dynamics within Taiwan, do favor keeping with the status quo, which is China continues to insist that Taiwan is part of China, but Taiwan continues to exist as a kind of like semi-sovereign semi-sovereign state. So there's quite a lot of delicate balance that's been established in relations between China and Taiwan over many years. And I think my understanding is that the vast majority of Taiwanese people want to respect that balance, and it's a relatively small number of radicals who want to push forward a program of asserting Taiwan independence and sovereignty vis-a-vis China that the mainland Chinese find quite provocative. And of course, the Chinese could see what's happened in Ukraine, when a country allows itself to become, a battleground between great powers, it gets destroyed, doesn't it? So, I mean, that's the Ukraine war has definitely, reinforced the propensity among Taiwanese people to actually to keep the situation as stable as possible.
When you talk about what has happened to Ukraine, we have to remind, we have to think of Europe, what has happened to Europe during this war. I think this relationship between Russia and Europe was so devastating for the economy of Europe. And they cut everything, they put a lot of sanctions on Russia. And when I asked about China, I wanted to bring this concept of having at the same time conflict with Russia and China, because Europeans were totally in sanctioning Russia. And right now, if they start any sort of conflict with China, what would happen to Europe? And what would European do to convince the United States is not in the benefit of Europe to have at the same time to have two conflicts, two fronts with Russia and China? That would devastating. That would be devastating for the economy of Europe.
I think for that reason is that the Europeans are not keen on opening up a second front with China over Taiwan. Yeah, I mean, for them, one front, the Ukraine front, is enough, and they see the danger of what's happened already in relation to the least of the Americans being distracted from the European theatre by events elsewhere. So no, the Europeans don't actually want to develop conflictual relations with China, yeah, which is why they're very resistant to American militancy in relation to China. And as you say, there's a huge like mutual independence between European economies and Chinese economies. Yeah, I mean, Europe's played a huge price economically, and that price continues to be paid, or will be continue to be paid for decades as a result of the Ukraine war, and as a result of the sanctions that it's imposed on Russia. It certainly doesn't want to add to its economic woes by any kind of break with China. So I think, yeah, the European reluctance to get involved or in any kind of conflict relationship with China over Taiwan or whatever else, I mean, that's a bit of a stabilizing factor in terms of what might happen in the Far East.
Yeah, one of the other signs of having this alliance between Russia and China would be the latest visit of Xi to the European Union. He went to France, Serbia, and Hungary. How do you see the China's behavior, this China's policy in Europe vis-a-vis what's happening between Russia and China?
Okay, so you're talking about the developing Russian-China relationship, which is very close, getting closer in all kinds of different ways, including economically. But okay, and the Chinese are, I think, are committed to that relationship with Russia on a strategic basis. It's a long-term basis. It's a fundamental commitment. They see it as the relation's been fundamental to their interests as a state. But that doesn't mean to say that China wants to burn its bridges to other countries and other parts of the world. Yeah, China wants to make, for its own, well, many reasons, but obviously economic reasons are quite important. It wants, to remain on good trading terms, with Europe. It wants to remain on good trading terms with the United States as well, which is why, the Chinese are, it seems to me, are amazingly, what's the word, restrained when it comes to, responding to, provocative American sanctions against their companies and against their industries. Yeah. So China, China wants to maintain, good relations with all countries. Yeah. That's the stated, Chinese position on the world, which is, of course, another reason why China, wants to the war in Ukraine to come to an end as soon as possible, because the war, obviously, and all the dangers arising from it, threatens the global economy, threatens China's trade and economic relationships. Yeah, potentially in quite radical ways. But I suppose the other thing is, of course, that then you need to bring the BRICS into the picture as well. Yeah, and also in particular, there's various like discussions about challenging Western, or specifically United States, financial hegemony in terms of setting up an alternative to the dollar-denominated, world financial situation. So yeah, so China, wants to maintain Ecuador relationships with many different countries, including the United States, but it's not relying on that happening. It's actually, developing alternative financial and economic models and relationships with other countries as well. So China's very much, hedging its bets in terms of its acceleration, which is what you'd expect to be the case as well. And also, I think that, if the war in Ukraine comes to an end, if the conflict between Russia and the West and Russia and NATO winds down, maybe not doesn't come to an end, but at least what becomes lesser in its intensity, then I think Russia actually will be keen to reconstruct its trade relations, yeah, with the West. From Russian point of view, Europe is a huge market. It was a huge market for it. For its goods and services, and could be again in the future. And also, Europe produces a lot of stuff, technology and so on, that Russians would like to have, or would like to make use of it. So, I don't, I, you know, and actually, Putin has said, he's always saying to us, he said this many times actually, he said, yes, okay, there is no relationship between Russia and Europe at the moment, yeah, because of the war, because of what Europe, how Europe has responded to that war. But that doesn't mean to say there can't be a relationship in the future, right? But whether or not there is going to be any kind of relationship with Russia in future with Europe, it's up to the Europeans themselves. Yeah, they need to change their attitude, change their policy. In particular, Putin, that they need to assert their independence from the United States. They need to look after their own interests. They need to, see that there can be value in having good relations with Russia, particularly in the economic field. So actually, so yeah, I there could be, if the war comes to an end, particularly if it comes to an end in the reasonably near future, there could be quite a rapid reconstruction of economic and trade relations between Russia and Europe.
In your opinion, those companies that have left Russia since this conflict started would have the opportunity to getting back to Russia when this war comes to an end, because they have been replaced by Chinese companies. I don't know if we would have.
Well, replaced by China, or a lot, most of them actually been like taken over by Russian companies. Yeah, Russian up, gone into Russian ownership. Well, actually, lots of them actually haven't left. You know, they've kept some kind of operation or connection with Russia. And the reason I've done that is because I think precisely because they see they want to be in a position, they want to be positioned in the future to restart, their operations in Russia. And there's quite a lot of, and there have been some reports recently, haven't there, with suggestions that more and more companies, particularly Western companies, big way, are becoming more and more reluctant to sever their connections with Russia, because they see what's happening geopolitically. They see the way the war is going, and what's the point of investing in a lost cause, the cause of a Ukrainian Western victory over Russia? That's very definitely a lost cause. And from a kind of business point of view, what's the point of investing in that cause, right? It doesn't do any good. It doesn't make any difference to the world. All it does is, provide opportunities for our competitors. So I think, there are some signs that, so yeah, there are some signs of that even now Western business interests are preparing to re-engage with Russia on a big scale as soon as it becomes possible for them to do so politically.
Yeah, we have this summit in Switzerland in June, and they want to talk about the Zelensky's peace plan, and they have invited Lula, the president of Brazil, and South Africa, China, but it seems that none of them is going to be there. And Lula said he's not going to be there. The head of South Africa said the same thing. It doesn't seem that China is willing to send anybody there. Even Biden, Bloomberg reported that Biden is not going to be there. And it's unbelievable what they're doing in Switzerland. What, in your opinion, what's the reason of these kind of summits? We have seen the same thing in Saudi Arabia. It didn't work at all. There was no outcome. How do you see this Switzerland summit?
I mean, the summit, I think, was, this is Switzerland's summit, isn't it? This is their initiative, yes. And they chose to go down the road of having a summit that didn't include Russia, but did include Ukraine. And maybe at the time which they took that approach, that made a lot of sense, but it obviously doesn't make much sense now when some big countries, China, may not even attend the meeting itself, and certainly will the top leaders won't be won't be attending. I mean, yeah, basically what you mentioned, the names, it's all the leaders of the BRICS. No leader, no BRICS leader. Yes, the founding members, the core members of BRICS, is actually going to attend this conference. And for good reason, because what's actually going to happen at this meeting? It's very, I mean, obviously, the Ukrainians and the West are going to try and make some propaganda out of it, but if it comes to any kind of like proposal or agreement, it's going to be pretty anodyne, pretty kind of meaningless, I think. So what's the point? What's the purpose of it? I think the Americans can see that as well, which is why they don't want Biden to be associated. They want Biden in an election year to be associated with a losing proposition, this kind of meaningless meaningless peace conference. But on the other hand, it might serve, it may serve a purpose in the sense of, okay, putting peace back on the agenda in terms of discussions going on. And of course, didn't haven't Brazil and China Yes, put forward their own proposal for an alternative peace ground. I think it came from Brazil, didn't it? There's a proposal that there should be an alternative peace congress, a peace meeting, which would include Russia as well as Ukraine, and would put on the table some meaningful proposals which could lead to peace. So if this Swiss kind of meeting, at least gets people talking about the possibility of peace and provides openings for others to come up with more sensible approaches, sensible policy proposals. Yeah, then maybe it's not such a it's not such a bad idea. But I think basically, I think it's going to be a bit of a damp squib, isn't it? Really, I really don't. I mean, I'll be surprised even if I doubt that the media, Western media, will take much notice of it at all.
Putin, just to wrap up this session, Putin, in his recent interview with Tucker Carlson, was talking about when he was asked if Russia has already achieved all these objectives in Ukraine, he said that no, we are going to denazify Ukraine. He didn't talk about any sort of territory ambitions on the part of Russia. And we've heard later he said that Odessa is a Russian city. But he didn't say that we're going to capture Odessa officially. And it seems that they're trying to find a political settlement in Ukraine just to denazify Ukraine. And when he was asked, what does it mean when you talk about denazifying Ukraine? He said something like a law in the constitution of Ukraine that would not allow this neo-nationalist, these neo-Nazis to be part of the government, to capture the government. I don't know how they're going to control that. But it seems that whatever is in the mind of Russians, it's a political settlement. It's nothing beyond that. And what, in your opinion, what would be the solution for the peace, for any sort of political settlement between Russia and Ukraine?
Okay, well, as I said earlier, I think Putin wants a political settlement if he can get one that actually satisfies Russia's security needs. It's as simple as that, really. I mean, Putin has consistently said that the war in Ukraine is not about territory, it's about Russia's security. Okay, the security of Russia as a state, but also the security of people living in Ukraine who speak Russian or identify with Russia, who were resistant to Ukrainian nationalism's attempt to impose a uniform identity. I mean, so the security of pro-Russia people in Ukraine, that's the goal. And he's been reticent to commit himself to specifying what that means in might mean in terms of in territorial interior terms. And quite rightly too, because obviously, Putin is not going to reveal his hand and say, yeah, okay, so what we're going to capture Odessa, we're going to capture Kharkov, we're going to do this, do that. I mean, that makes no sense in military terms to actually reveal your strategic objectives to the enemy. So he's never going to commit himself to the extent of Russia's territorial advance, except that he has already committed himself in one respect, which he's committed himself to the provinces that was incorporated into Russia in October 2022, Zaporozhye, Donetsk, Lugansk, and Kherson. Those four provinces that were incorporated, became part of Russia in October 22. He's absolutely 100% committed to those territories remaining part of Russia. Now, it's not exactly clear about where he sees the boundaries of those provinces lying. There are some ambiguities, but that's so if you're talking about any peace settlement or any political solution of the Ukrainian war, that's absolutely fundamental to it from the Russian point of view, is that Russia gets to retain Crimea and the four provinces, right? So that's the starting point. And there's no way the war is going to, on earth, the war is going to end until Putin and the Russians have, at the very least, achieved that goal. And of course, in military terms, that's what's going on in Ukraine at the moment, right? Strategically, what the Russians are trying to do militarily in the next few months is to actually complete their occupation of the Donbass, particularly Donetsk, and also to extend their control over sections of Kherson and Zaporozhye. So there's a connection there between the military strategic goal of the Russians and their political goals in relation to these four provinces. Now, beyond that, what territory, Putin and the Russians will want or will take, it depends on how the war goes, how the military situation unfolds. I don't think that Russia is in a position to capture Odessa or capture Kharkov or make, significant advances into Western Ukraine. I don't think it has that capability at the moment. And if that's what Putin wants to do, and he may well want to do that, I don't think so, but he might do, then we're talking about a very long war indeed. So, but I think that, Putin will be willing to stop short of occupying Odessa, occupying Kharkov, if the rest of his security demands can be satisfied. If he can be satisfied that Ukraine will not just be demilitarized, but it will also effectively be Nazified. If he can be satisfied that NATO, in effect, will get out of Ukraine, will stay out of Ukraine. That if he can be satisfied that Ukraine and NATO are not actually going to, or at least NATO and Ukraine concert, are not going to pose a threat to Russian security in the future, right? And also, if he can be satisfied with regards to the Ukraine's treatment of those of its citizens who remain under its control in the territories it continues to control, who remain oriented towards Russia. So yeah, so Putin has some very his political goals, strategic goals. But also, he has these what you might call like political cultural goals in relation to offering protection to pro-Russia Ukrainians.